following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
Let's tidy up this tangle of film by putting it on a reel. Here is a motion picture film, 1,000 feet, 16,000 separate photographs.
Welcome, everybody.
Hey everybody, I'm Michael.
I'm Mark.
And we're the Real Debaters, where the art of cinema meets the power of debate. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing really well. It's been a minute since I've been here in the studio.
That's okay. Everybody, we all have these adult things we have to do with our lives. Some of them are work, some of them are play. It's totally fine. It's just we see each other outside of this podcast, listener. Mark is one of the closest friends I have, so like we'll go out and do bitch sessions, but you know, we've been talking about life and
but we didn't record them.
We just didn't record them. You may not have wanted to listen to those.
That's the more the Debaters After Dark.
It's very Debaters After Dark. Yes. It's Debaters on the Cutting Room Floor, probably. Needless to say, though, Mark is back. So if you're a big fan of Mark, you got a great episode for you today.
If you're a big fan of Mark, you have issues beyond.
No.
Yes. I'm kidding. Self-deprecating humor.
Mark is going to shit on himself, but I'm going to tell you that if you're a big fan of comic books, listener, Mark has String Bean Comics with his comic. I call him your Lex Luthor, like the guy who's taking over the Winnipeg comic scene.
Ah.
The two of you are just approaching this whole industry.
Well, we really just jumping in and, yeah. And not wasting any time. We don't know what we can't do, which is always great when you're new to a field, right? You see that sometimes. You're like, what? They can't do that. But they don't know they can't do that.
And
then they end up doing it.
Yeah.
Where you think, I didn't think that could be done. Anyways, I don't know if we're that quite... We're going to overcome that much adversity, but on that note, I don't know if we're going to cover it later on about what's going on and stuff.
Sure.
And I don't know when this is going to air.
Next weekend.
But...
Let's talk about us.
And I don't know how many people listen that are into this comic thing. Me and my partner with String Bean.
Yes.
Somebody that has been... used to run the giant Comic-Con at the convention center. Used to be called C4.
Yeah.
Right? Central Canada Comic-Con.
Yep.
Mike, who is local, he was the owner of Cobra Collectibles. He used to run that. It sort of got handed over to this company from Montreal that's been running the Comic-Con, the Winnipeg Comic-Con for the last 4 years, 3 years.
Oh, they're part of that?
They came in for, they do Comic-Cons across Canada. So that group comes in and puts that on. So it changed dramatically from what the old C4 used to be. That was a little more local based. Was a little more grassroots, way more comic-y, way more...
You'd see the same people all the time, right?
Way more fan-driven kind of stuff, right? They're the ones that used to bring in, like, the wrestlers and, interesting
Jake
characters.
The Snake, brother.
Yeah. Rather than just whoever's doing the con circuit.
Yeah.
Anyways, so Mike kind of got pushed out, and what he'd been doing for the last 2 or 3 years is having, in May, doing his small C4 Comic-Con out of the Kubota Center.
Yeah.
Mike decided this year that he's just overwhelmed and he can't do it. So we've taken the torch, and String Beans Comics is now presenting C4 Comic-Con coming up March 23rd.
Oh, fuck, buddy.
Yeah.
People want to see that. They want to see shit when they can't go to the big touring circuit. They want something that's a little bit more homegrown, something that people remember. There's fucking nostalgia behind that.
So this
way
is
to
the first
bury
time,
the lead. You
this is the first time we're talking about this. because it's just happening. It just really, we announced it like 4 or 5 days ago.
Wow.
So String Bean Comics, me and my plumber buddy Troy are, gonna try to keep it going, with the blessing of Mike. We're gonna keep the name. We're trying to book people in as much as local. Just right now, we're trying to keep the collector side of things
sure,
going.
Yeah.
Comics, toys, collectibles,
what it
cool
started
pop
as.
Culture stuff.
Yeah.
Our hope is in the future that we can morph it into like sort of a mini local Comic-Con.
Yeah.
And maybe offer up some people coming in to doing signings on a small scale or some interesting events or, you know, the cosplay aspect and stuff. We're on a tight schedule this year,
sure.
Right? He said, I can't do it. And then we're like, well, let's just try to make it happen.
Yeah.
So right now we're booking tables. If on the off chance somebody hears this and you sell really cool stuff,
dude, talk like people listen to us.
Collectible related. Well, I mean, if you're into selling stuff and you've listened to this, find us on Instagram or Facebook, String Bean Comics, or myself, Mark Cowell. That would be COWL. On Facebook,
yep,
like
yep.
Batman's cowl.
Yeah. The cool Cal.
And we can also be reached at stringbeancomics204@gmail.com if you want to book a table. Get in touch with us. Come on down, like, hawk your wares, have some fun, get dirty with the people in the trenches. I think we have 60 or 70 tables available for rent, and I think we're more than half sold.
Fucking A.
So yeah, it's going to be, I mean, it's new. We haven't really done the huge, large-scale thing, but how hard can it be?
Yeah.
When you're bringing a lot of those people together, I mean, they're bringing their own little store and their own little promotion and their own little.
You're just building,
you know,
You're building the arc, Noah.
Exactly. And we're just kind of organizing it into, you know, make sure it happens. So
that's fucking, like, I mean, you're doing way better than Chip and Pepper did with Cub Bread or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, that's not a hard, that's not hard to do.
But, like, no, that's super awesome. And you know what? He's going to give me all that information, and we're going to put it in the show notes so that no matter who
listens to this.
We got
some cool social media flyers and artwork done up for it.
And you're going to send that to me so I can.
I'm sending it as we speak.
This is perfect, perfect. For other shit that you might want to know about with us, which you can follow Mark's stuff. If you go to the link in our bio, there's, like, the link in our bio has all the landing pages for everybody on the show. So, like, if you want to follow Dodgeball because Emily does Dodgeball. If you like comic books because Mark's doing comics. If you like audiovisual stuff, follow Rob. Nobody does, but follow Rob and make him feel better. The comedian stuff. So it's all there. But, like, you can just go click once and then, boom, you will find String Bean Comics.
It is a good landing spot for all things debater.
It's the it's where we mass debate in the debaterverse.
That is the master debater landing spot. Yes.
The bullseye.
Yes.
But for the show, which I'm sure I know a podcast that would love to come to the Comic-Con and, like, let people come over and talk about stuff about the Comic-Con and what they like.
I'm sure we could make something pretty cool happen.
You know,
that way. Yeah.
We'll hang out. We'll hit them up before they get in. We'll hold a debate up sign and be like, debate me Marvel.
We could even get maybe a little table right at the entrance that could.
I would love to
be making
people.
Things happen.
Advertise
the show.
I'll ask the guy. See what he says.
I'll say I know the guy.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll see if I can put in a good word.
Okay.
He's hard to get hold of.
Doesn't
answer his messages.
Missing in fucking action.
Yeah.
I answer my messages. Anyways, for the show, what do we got coming up? We got February 13th. We're doing our inaugural. We're doing our inaugural night at Rudy's.
Eat and Drink downtown.
Rudy's Eat and Drink.
In the Hydro building.
In the Manitoba Hydro building, 360 Portage Avenue, I think is the address for
Super cool venue.
Super cool venue. Like, it makes me feel like Don Draper when I'm in there.
100%.
That lounge is just, we went there for.
Makes you want to have an old fashioned and a smoke.
Every fucking time. And then I got to go outside to do it in minus 75 degree weather.
I don't even smoke, and I feel like I should have a smoke.
I can't begin to tell you how much fun this trivia night's going to be. February 13th, 7 p.m. We're doing four rounds now.
Ooh.
Four rounds. Rudy's is throwing in a gift certificate for one of the prizes. We're going to send you to the movies on the Real Debaters account. There's no account. We just buy a gift card. And it's going to be four rounds. There's going to be image based. There might be some songs involved. But because it's the month of love, or the fucking overrated holiday of Valentine's Day happening on the 14th, we decided that why don't you celebrate Real Debater style the day before. Right.
There you go.
Don't chase all the restaurants and all the things to do the night of. Get this out of the way. This is perfect for a first date, a second date, a double date.
Hell, a last date.
Like, yeah, right? You're trying to break up with somebody? Come do rom-com trivia. But, like, there's the lead right there. It is all romantic comedy themed. It's like, what's a rom-com? Like, what does rom-com stand for? Some people don't actually fucking know that.
Obviously.
Right? What's a meet-cute, right? That moment in a romantic comedy, which is what rom-com stands for, where two people meet over something silly, like they both want to buy a pair of gloves, one has the right, one has the left. That is a meet-cute. These are the kinds of questions.
Not Romulan communication?
No, not Romulan. That's one of the answers, though, on this set of trivia questions. So tickets are on sale right now. Head to the link in the show notes. You can buy them if you're from Winnipeg or the surrounding area. Come if you're from Thompson. Like, I don't care. It's on you. But, like, come on down. Anybody's welcome. We love doing these. They sell out, right, Mark?
They do sell out, and they sell out fast.
Yeah,
There's a line. There's a waiting list.
And if you hear Rudy's and you're thinking no Little Brown Jug, we will go anywhere. We'll anybody who will have us, we will go.
We are loyal to trivia.
We are loyal to trivia and those who host trivia nights. That is where our loyalty lies. So February 13th, 7 p.m. $15 tickets this time. We're bumping up the venue, but you get a drink with that.
Oh, that's nice.
You do.
Yeah.
So
maybe some better prizes.
Some better prizes. Some
maybe
some...
String Bean Comics can sponsor a couple of those prizes for some movie tickets.
I know that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll give him a call too.
Thank you. Never answers his messages.
Fucking guy.
So that's February 13th. We hope to see you there. There is only 80 tickets available. I didn't want to.
Oh, jeez.
Like, so
that's...
like.
And at four people group, that's only 20 groups.
That's only 20 groups. That's 20 teams.
Oof.
Right? So get them now so you don't miss out, because then you're going to be like, what are we going to do for Valentine's Day? Oh, my God, I have these tickets to this silly podcast trivia night thing that these dudes from Winnipeg do. That's a lot of fun that we make.
And with the way the weather's going, it'd probably be plus 12, 14
right?
by then.
You don't even, it's going to be a balmy fucking February night.
Maybe on the patio we'll do it.
Yeah,
who knows?
Hey, if Winnipeggers know how to go hard in the paint in the middle of February. Then on the 28th, we're also doing movie trivia bingo nights that still have a working title. Back at the Handsome Daughter, we're doing Scott Pilgrim versus the World. I mean, bread makes you fat. Bread makes you fat. Before I make you vegan, there's so many great lines.
Is there
lines.
not a Scott Pilgrim coming out?
It did come out already.
Oh, is it out already?
It was Scott Pilgrim versus the Universe, I think, and it was okay. Netflix.
Oh, yes. I remember hearing something, seeing something.
You thought it was going to be the same thing, but then it ended up being a completely different story. They launched it the same, but the second episode on was completely different.
Well, there you go.
So this is how this works. You come to movie night. We put it on. It's free. You don't have to pay for anything if you don't want to. If you want to do the trivia beforehand, that's the only thing you got to pay for. It's $5. And then we'll do some bingo.
Only $5?
Only
$5. Jeez. You
right?
can't even get a coffee for that.
I know. And this is going to be like 2.5-3 hours of fun. You have a chance to win some tickets to one of our trivia nights. That's the prize we like to give away.
I see. Everything comes full circle.
It does. We're vertically integrated here at The Real Debaters. And so that's doors at 6:30, trivia at 7, movies 7:30, 7:45.
And that what's the date on that one again?
That's February 28th. From The Handsome Daughter.
The day before the last day of February, because we're in a leap year.
That's right. How does that screw us for a long weekend?
I don't know.
It
screws us somewhere.
It fucks you in the drive-thru.
Everybody enjoy your extra day. And if it's your birthday, happy 8th birthday. Even though you're 32.
Check the math on that. How do you think those people feel?
Do you think it
fucks with them?
Ask me if I care, Mike.
I know the answer. And you know what? I also know that that's everything we have. So
those people have some adversity to overcome.
They do. Like I mentioned about our events, go check the show notes. It'll all be there for you. Tickets and all that stuff and all that jazz. So we hope to see you there. I don't have any more adult stuff, any more selfless promotion stuff. So let's step off this mortal coil. What'd you watch this week?
Like a Sarlacc pit.
Like a
open the floor?
Like a 1,000-year digestive tract.
All righty. What did I watch?
What do you watch?
Murder at the End of the World. It is on...
Give listener the Coles notes where you spoiled it for
Disney?
Me. It's on Disney. It's on Disney Plus.
It's one of Stars, one of those like...
Stars via Disney.
Yes.
Like Hulu via Disney.
100%. I said we have your protagonist is a sort of... what was her name? Salander in...
Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Sort of similar...
Romy Mara?
Yes. You know, you sort of counterculture hacker young girl... who is also heavily involved in online sleuthing, right? Big thing, online sleuths, collecting information.
True crime aficionados.
I know we've talked about in this past Patton Oswalt's connection with his wife.
Yes.
Right?
That was a great series.
And things like that. So anyways, she's part of this group. She happens to also be the daughter of a medical examiner. So she has this inside...
Well, she's got a way to think about the world.
Inside knowledge into death, and she's very comfortable around it.
Death and hacking.
Anyway, so that's how she comes to meet a few people in this forum, one guy in particular. So that's sort of the bounce back in time is her connection to this guy where they're sleuthing together. Now, fast forward years later, when they've gone their separate ways for some reason, I don't know why, I'm sure we'll find out in the course of the show, where they're both invited to a billionaire's getaway in the middle of Iceland.
That doesn't sound like a getaway. That sounds like a lair.
It sounds, I don't want to.
Sounds like Dr. Evil's condo.
It is sort of. These people like almost get kidnapped on this plane and taken to this remote location because all of them have something to offer for the greater good of humanity.
Yeah, that's what you were saying.
And it's got a climate overtone, a climate agenda, how to stop things. And everybody's, there's some really diverse characters that come from all over. And just like your stereotypical sort of sleuthing Clue show, we learn how the characters are intertwined. Two people that seem to have no connection clearly are connected somehow. You drop little red herrings. There's clues that if you're paying attention, you're going to catch later on down the line.
Put your fucking phone down. Watch the show.
It's got the sleuthing portion of it has a very tech overtone.
That's home for you.
With AI and hacking, and people are using the technology not just for sleuthing, but our killer, not to spoil anything, it's called Murder at the End of the World. our killer uses technology in their murder or murders. But interesting, you know, ways that you couldn't imagine if I gave you 100 guesses right now about how somebody used technology to kill somebody else. And you get immersed in this world of this sort of billionaire. This is his lair, if you will. And you think it's kind of a hotel, but you find out he actually lives there and has this underground city almost. And
this has
it's
like
fascinating.
A Ozymandias.
It very much so.
Kind of effect to it.
Yes. They all get called to the table, and everybody brings something, and everybody's trying to figure out, A, why they're there. Our protagonist doesn't really know.
A murder mystery at the end of the world.
It is a murder mystery at the end of the world. Inevitably, being in the middle of Iceland, they're going to get snowed in, and people aren't going to be able to come or go.
Snowden's there? really?
Yes.
Fucking, that's meta.
Well, you know what? He's Icelandic now. Russia kicked him out. And...
Oh, I haven't been following his...
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Reykjavik took him in. So anyways, here it's pretty cool. It's a slow burn. Like
that is,
I said,
everything you love.
It's 7 or 8. It really is. It speaks to a lot of, yeah, because it's a slow burn. It's taken me a little while to, it's one of those shows you need to put aside some time to watch.
Okay.
Right. Cause there's lots of little things that you catch along the way, like murder mysteries do.
Yeah.
You don't want to be distracted while you're watching a murder mystery because you miss the shot in the mirror where the guy's standing.
It takes
with
3 seconds to lose a murder mystery.
100%. So you got to pay attention, but it's really, really cool. There's a lot of cool twists.
I got to admit, like, I skipped that tile a few times because I was like, Clive Owen, the last thing I saw him in was where he played Bill Clinton in the Ryan Murphy.
Yeah, he's
thing.
The eccentric billionaire that's brought everyone there.
And how's his performance?
Good. He sort of got that, the stoic, starts off as like the stoic, cold billionaire-ish type.
Played billionaire.
Yeah, you're sort of evil billionaire almost. Like, you know, he's cold.
Evil billionaire.
And then you do get, right now where I'm at in the show is you're getting some insight into, is he really all that cold?
What made him cold?
Yeah, inevitably in those shows, right, the person that you think is going to be the cold, who's the evil, whatever, like, oh, they for sure did it. They turn into be the best person in the entire house.
Yeah, yeah.
The person you love is the person who's going to do the murdering.
It's like reverse Saw.
It is very much. Right now it's the interplay of everything else, and my second person in the house has now just died.
Oh.
Right? So you start realizing, well, shit, this is now as people are on the trail of what's happening. The first one was written off as not a murder. Because of the way that they died, it was an accident. So now when two accidents happen too close together, we've now realized it's full on, lock the doors, it's a murder.
How many Mark Zuckerberg sized bunkers out of 10 do you give it?
I'm gonna give it an 8 out of 10 floors underground.
So if we go deep underground bunkers.
Oh, yes.
And base. Oh man. I'm genuinely not gaslighting you. I will watch this. Like, this sounds,
I want someone to talk to about it and see what they're, and it I'll bounces back to you, sort of the young budding romance slash murder mystery investigation. These two people meet up in real life and they kind of go on a trek after the serial killer, and that's the bouncing back and forth between the way they met and where they're at.
I do
now.
Love a good time shift.
Yes.
Too, right? Because it's almost like you're watching two shows for the price of one.
It is, and there's lots of weird references. The guy who started off before that was kind of a hacker online sleuth, it sort of became an artist, a Banksy-esque artist. Ooh. And that's how a lot of these famous people know him, because they want to be associated with this counterculture.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, political activist artist kind of thing. Yeah. And it's
I'm gonna shred the Mona Lisa, bitches.
Very much. That's his jam. So
that's my jelly.
Yes.
Cool. No. And the other, you watched another thing that Jimmy knows some people who actually weren't in it, in Echo.
Oh, you know what?
Echo was the other thing you watched. Echo,
and I binged the whole thing.
That's like an afternoon, eh? It's like five episodes?
Yeah, it's quick. Five or six episodes.
34, 45 minutes?
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
What, 22 minutes of credits?
Something along those lines. I love Marvel. I love that they're doing different things. I love that it's not, it doesn't have to be a big scale superhero thing where they're saving the world. The whole show is basically a backstory of Echo.
That's what I've heard.
Who's Indigenous American. It takes her back from at the end of Hawkeye, if anybody watched the Hawkeye series,
yes,
where she shoots Kingpin in the face.
Yep.
Now she's going back to her hometown to go back to her roots. You see her back, her family, how she was raised. But it's got some great like Indigenous American, sort of the way that Miss Marvel gave us a glimpse into Indian culture.
Or Wakanda Forever with Mayan.
Right. 100%. Right. That it's doing that with Indigenous American culture.
Nice. Well, Prey, the movie, did well.
Very much. This would be sort of more modern.
Okay.
In a lot of its and not only is Echo Indigenous, she's deaf and she has one leg. So she's disabled, deaf, Indigenous American superhero. Basically, she's kind of a bad guy that's turning good.
One might say there's a lot of adversity there.
One adversity. Like, not one, not two, not... And what's also cool is that's not the character. Like, that's the actress.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wait. The actress is deaf, has one leg, and is Indigenous American.
Wow.
Right? So they've made that the hero, but they've worked all of those things into her character.
That's what good storytelling does, where it's like, okay, how do we, like, you have some things that are different. And I mean, the deaf and the leg thing, right? Like, those are things that you have to accommodate for, essentially, right?
Yes.
Because a lot of people don't know how to instruct somebody who's deaf in a movie, right? You need more people, you need different styles of communication. Like, you've got a lot of logistics to hump over. But to double that and make that the character is smart, right?
And it's super cool that all the people from her childhood all know ASL because they grew up with her.
Sure. So
and
they all had to
the
learn.
The overlaps it's just very casual how everybody does ASL. And then it plays into the people that don't do ASL. There's kind of little twists there. A lot of the characters are people that were all from Reservation Dogs, for those that have followed a lot of stuff on Taika Waititi's stuff, also on Disney Plus. But a lot of the characters you're going to see, Alora Dannon's character, the actress that plays her in Reservation Dogs. I don't know the actress's
sure,
name.
It's okay.
I'm sorry. She's got a major role in there. There's, the guy that plays the cop. I can't remember his name in the show. He's plays, Echo's father in the show.
Well, they all have a great resume now to
I
be like.
I think there's 10 at least people that I recognize back and forth between the shows. And they're all great. It's a neat little story. It's not, grandiose, but it's a little heartfelt. It's also mixed in with all of those things. You know, I know what you're thinking. There's too many things, right?
I'm just wondering how she kills Kingpin and we get Kingpin again.
Well, there you go. You know what? People never die in shows, right?
Well, if it didn't happen on screen, John Wick.
And what's, not to spoil anything, but it's also a big story about, which is huge within Indigenous culture that you come to find, is the strong matriarchy. It's the
woman.
The powerful women that have passed things on.
The woman.
And you start learning in her lineage.
Oral teachings.
That she gets a lot of where she's at from these strong women from the past. And there's these flashbacks and how these powers have sort of built. And her different sides of her that she has are from these ancestors.
So her abilities are coming from an Indigenous.
From her ancestors. Yes.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Because that... there's
and
not
strong female lineage that make it happen. So it's got a really cool... just overall vibe, message, neat story. There's laughs. It's not super superhero-y, but there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, I mean, we're approaching Bullseye, who is heightened sense. If you really want to get down to the science of his powers, it's heightened sense.
Well, he just doesn't miss. Yeah.
Yeah, I know that.
Really good hand-eye coordination.
Sure, but nothing, nothing in the world of like superpowers being given to you by a lightning bolt. Or enhanced in some way, right? So
we have Daredevil Born Again coming out, right? So we're, you know, blind Daredevil who's got the enhanced skills. I think that, right, Bullseye is going to be the bad guy. Echo's going to be tied into that. Kingpin's going to be the bad guy. It's all small scale. It's your it's your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, if you will. But you're, you know, Hell's Kitchen, Daredevil, New York.
Community.
Not saving the world from, you know, aliens from another dimension.
Exactly.
It's
grounded.
Right? Yeah. It's crooks in the city that you're gonna
And I think
crime.
That's what tells good Marvel stories is when you do that instead of like dun dun dun, dun, dun white guy superhero, dun dun, dun dun white woman superheroine, right? Like that is full, but this new stuff that they're experimenting with is pretty
great.
Fucking cool.
And people get up in arms when it's not the same as the book or the as the comic, and you know what? You're not going to please those people.
No.
But I think you bring a really neat story with ties into contemporary issues and plots and themes, and you got to just go and appreciate it for what it is.
Yeah, don't hold a candle up against anything else but this, and then step back a little bit and walk away.
So I think it was really good, worthwhile seeing.
How many? What's Kingpin's real name?
I don't know. Wilson Fisk.
How many Fisks of Wilson out of 10 do you give it?
You know what? It's a seven. It's a seven, 7.5. It's not the best thing that I've seen, but it's far from bad. It's worth watching. It's endearing.
I have some catch up to do.
I'm now.
I'm now behind. I got to do Miss Marvel. I got to do the Marvels, which I have now. I got to watch this, and I got to watch the Miss Marvel TV show. Those are the ones that I have. I crushed Loki.
Loki was amazing.
Broken-hearted Loki.
You can't. Possibly Loki season 2 is the best thing that Marvel's put out in the last since Endgame.
Oh yes, oh yes.
Yeah.
Like that's. I was just stunned at how much emotional depth they gave the prankster god. Right.
100%.
You know the ego, and the pride and every. Big word about him was just crushed in the finale where he pulls the strings of time and he's like, okay, I now have purpose. And I'm like, glorious purpose. It's just, it was so good.
Yeah, it was a great arc.
What did I watch this week? I am watching a lot of new television because new television is starting to come my way because with Disney and shit, like a season of television runs on Fox, I've noticed, to get all the ad money, but then it gets to Disney later. So Fargo's now approaching. So we've been watching Fargo, and Fargo season 5 is back. Both shows I'm watching, funny enough, are both back to like what made me love the first season. And the first season of Fargo was very loosely inspired by the movie. We had the same story, just done differently with different characters, but essentially you have a guy whose wife gets kidnapped and then his a family member doesn't want to pay the ransom, and then it all goes to shit, and you have a couple weird serial killers. Then all the other random crazy stories that, listener, by the way, when they say inspired by true events, it is bullshit. None of these have been ever inspired by true events. Fucking yell at me in the comments. Anyways, so season 1, fantastic. Season 2... still played into season 1 because the characters were related in some levels.
Are we talking about True Detective or Fargo?
Fargo. Okay. We're doing Fargo first. So season 2 had had a generation gap between both sets of characters.
Okay.
Certain people in season 2 were the parents of certain people in season 1.
Okay.
Then it kind of veered off and stopped being about this town, and that was the Ewan McGregor series where he plays a twin. And then there's the Chris Rock season, which I didn't watch because I didn't really like the Ewan McGregor season. So I was like, I'm not going to really push for this. Ewan McGregor was great, but the season was subpar. But then this came out and someone told me that Jon Hamm had nipple rings. And Juno Temple from our favorite soccer show that is eluding me right now.
Yes.
We'll get it in the notes for you listening.
Yeah.
Ted Lasso. Juno Temple from Ted Lasso is the lead And it is this weird story about a woman who's got a normal everyday life. Her husband's a car salesman. Ha ha ha. And something happens to her where she gets noticed in the news. And she's been trying to lead like a very sleeping with the enemy life, like run away from somebody and hide. But now she's been found. And the guy who found her is John Hamm's character, who's this right hard wing Republican sheriff from small town North Dakota, who sends a kill squad after her. And she somehow Manchurian candidate like becomes activated and becomes this not normal housewife anymore and can fuck people up.
Oh.
And that's where I'm at with it. And it's fantastic. It is weird. It's haunting almost. Like it just feels bad in a way that only Minnesota feels bad.
If I wanted to jump into this, would I need to watch any of the previous seasons?
You wouldn't need to watch any of the previous seasons to watch this season.
This season.
You could just jump into it. Each season outside of the first season, actually I should say the first and the fifth season are both as loosely based on the structure of the script of Fargo as possible. The other three in between are, you could watch them and it doesn't matter anywhere, right? Good, like, I mean, Jesse Plemons is in one with Kirsten Dunst.
Oh, so it is Kirsten.
It's Kirsten.
Well, not, when you first said Kirsten and I said, Kristen or Kirsten, and you said Kristen, then it took me away from Dunst. I would have said Dunst.
I was wrong. I'm sorry, I dunced the moment.
Speaking of dunces.
Yeah. Anyways, Kirsten Dunst is in the second season with Jesse Plemons. All in all, they're all good, but you could jump into any season. This one I suggest jumping into because Juno is amazing.
Well, I will definitely put it on my to-do list.
I give it, honestly, right now, so far, I give it 8 out of 10.
Oh, that's awesome.
Nipple rings on John Hamm. Don Draper nipple rings.
I'm all over any murder mystery-esque, people dying cool stories right now. I'm into that all day long.
Okay, then all of the seasons of Fargo, there's always a crime that needs to be solved, and there's always people that are, you know, afoot, and things are always not as they seem.
I love things being afoot.
Right? So many feet. So Fargo was the one I just started. I'm now, oh my God, like, if you know me, you know that True Detective is a big deal for me. The first season of True Detective, besides the fact that two best friends of 30 years are acting together, and it just so happens to be Matthew McConaughey and, you know, Woody Harrelson.
You mean brothers?
Have they done it yet?
I don't know, but they should.
Well, there's a rumor that they were going to. They just, maybe they're waiting for a really bad day to let everybody know that's true.
All right.
But yeah, apparently like third or fourth cousin or some shit that they're related. Point is that the first season of True Detective is some of the best produced and written television. Did you see it?
Yes.
Okay, you know what I'm talking about.
I do.
It sucked you in. There was this weird criminal.
Slow burny.
Slow burn.
Like, but sucked you in.
And there are works of cinematography. There is one episode where there is a chase between gang houses, and it's all one shot. And you're following them in. Like,
yes.
The motorcycle shootout. But it sucked you in, and it made you think that what if this was, like, metaphysical or supernatural, right? What if this actually wasn't a human doing these things? And you came around the end, and it was based in reality, but they did a really good enough job of making you, who's the spaghetti monster, right?
And I also really did like the they're telling the story. Like the way that they...
The
bouncing back and forth.
Again, time shift, right? You've got, you know, Harrelson's got the paunch and McConaughey looks like shit, right? But he's still searching the case and still putting the work in years later. Anyway, so everybody who's ever seen True Detective knows season one is legit. Season two just tried too hard.
It did.
Season three tried to get back but didn't know how far off it was from the first one. And I really think that had to do with the writer Nick Pizzolitto. He did all the work. Wrote, directed, did way too much.
I watched season two, which soured me, and I didn't watch season three.
Season two, I understand. Like, I loved it. Had a film noir aspect.
It did.
The dirty cop stuff I thought was pretty interesting, too. But it just had too many people. It was just too many things going on.
And it was
on.
Too big of a story.
Yeah, all over L.A. and California.
The human trafficking side of things?
Yeah, shit that didn't even have a home there, but they just stuck it in because I think they were confused. But the point is, season four is back to season one.
Good.
And the reason I say that is because Rustin Cole's grandfather or father has been mentioned. That's Matthew McConaughey's character.
Oh.
There are Easter eggs. And characters who tie back to season. The tattoo that's in some of the designs in the first season with that, the little triangle things that they were making, the wicker man, or whatever it was. There's a tattoo involved. That tattoo is showing up in this season.
Oh, cool.
So now you have a remote location, 30 Days of Night in Ennis, Alaska. It's just like 30 Days of Night, the vampire
movie. Jodie Foster, right?
Jodie Foster bringing her fucking A game. Like, rugged, old, kind of ignorant cop.
I love her as like a small town sheriff-y detective.
Dude, she's been promoted, but she's not happy about her promotion. She has a rough patch with Kylie Reese, I think is her name. Boxer turned actress.
Okay.
I'll show you a picture of her after. She'll fuck anybody up. She's doing really well. She's the girl with the pierced cheeks in the promo. They had a falling out, but this new case brings them together. And the new case is they find 8 scientists from a local Arctic secret government lab naked in the middle of the Alaskan wilderness, all tied together, and they don't know how they got there.
Oh,
that's the crime.
Oh, jeez, that sounds sort of supernatural-esque.
It is, and like it's very Hannibal, right?
There's a famous, I think it took place in like the Himalayas or something.
Are you talking about the Dyatlov Pass?
Yes.
Yeah.
All the scientists and things, yep. And yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
That's a neat mystery.
It is a very neat mystery. Like things done to the body that you need tools to do.
Yeah, or some creature that doesn't exist.
With a long 3-syllable name.
Yeah.
No, it's really, it's got Shauna. That's how good it is.
Oh, well, there you go.
And like, I tried to be like, okay, can we just watch the first season again so you can understand how great? And she's like, no. So I've just got her on Jodie Foster. But
everybody's on the Jodie Foster bandwagon.
Here, I'm gonna throw you a little spoiler. Just a nugget of the woman who writes this, Issa. I can't remember her last name, but she wrote this season. She created the whole season herself, and she's directing it.
Oh, nice.
So they've given her carte blanche to do this. 3 episodes. I think the second episode went up like 29% in viewership after the first one. So, you know, you got a winner when that jumps, right?
Some word of mouth, yeah.
But there's a moment where Kylie Reese, I think the boxer actor lady, who's awesome, she's talking to her booty call, who's a Spaniard from Spain, who's a nice fisher living in an Alaskan town. That's funny enough.
Why not?
They're in a shack. They're talking. They're right across from each other. But there's this huge gap between the two of them because she's not an emotional girl and he really likes her. So she needs to use him for intel on somebody in town to find out why these people were killed. So he says to her, okay, I'll get you your intel. But if I help you, you have to help me. And I shit you not, if you know your Silence of the Lambs. She goes, what do you mean? He says, quid pro quo. You tell me things, I tell you things. I literally did a lap around the living room being like, this fucking Silence of the fucking Lambs. It's like, oh my God, yes. Like, she's a fan, right? Like, and she didn't have Foster do it, but she just put it into the dialogue.
Yeah.
So True Detective is every Sunday. I have to wait now. I'm obsessed with a show that I have to wait weekly for.
I may just wait till it's all out.
I mean, do what your heart tells you, but like, I'm telling you, man, you'll get the first episode. The second episode's like 1:14.
Okay, so little mini movies.
Yeah, and like Alaska looks fucking beautiful. They're just outside of Fairbanks. All the things about a town that goes dark for 30 days and murder and science.
They have murder at the end of the world. Right? We're up in Iceland. Things are snowy and dark, and it just adds a whole new twist to everything.
I honestly give True Detective 9 Dr. Lecters.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Said like Jodie Foster.
With a side of fava beans?
Let's see, in a nice Chianti. You want to talk about what we've been dropping this whole episode?
Yeah, I thought we were almost done the episode. We should probably talk about some adversity.
Yeah, we should. We really fucking should. So if you haven't noticed, throw the little hints here, listener. The topic of the episode, if you've seen in the show notes, is overcoming adversity. And me and Mark had a conversation, and we realized that like when we did the one on death, that we really like talking about themes. I think that's what we really
do. Yeah.
Like what the themes tell us.
Yes. Cinematic tools.
Yeah. Tricks, plot devices, any of those things.
I mean, as famous Family Guy episode, Stewie's like, so you're going to get a protagonist and give him some adversity and that they have to overcome and Something along those lines, right?
Which the first point of this whole discussion. So obviously we're opening the floor. Open the floor. Who's that in the background?
Floor is open.
Okay. We're going to talk about, we're going to define it first. We're going to review some movies that really use the theme well, maybe change it up a bit, and then we'll conclude with what movies we like to watch when we're having a down moment or an underdog that we feel we relate to on screen if we have time for that. So I think, I mean, it is one of the major 12 stories that they tell, right? Overcoming adversity. It's always in every film.
You're hard pressed to find a movie that doesn't have some adversity that somebody overcomes.
At the bare bones of anything, there is some sort of thing that your protagonist has to overcome, but it might...
Whether it's the overwhelming arc or whether or not there's just a character involved in something else that has something that they need to overcome.
Right, and I mean, you could get down to scene-based, right? Like, some really good scenes have some pretty adversarial moments in them. But I think more along the lines of a good definition would really just be, like, you know, your character is having some sort of moral crisis or physical obstacle that they're trying to get over in some way throughout
something
the film.
That may seem insurmountable.
Yeah. What do you think? I mean, I know why I like watching a good death movie, right? But why do you, what is it like? We've talked about Happy Television, Ted Lasso, right? Like, overcoming the adversity of being a really, he doesn't know even how to fucking coach a football game, right? But what is it about that character, I guess, is my question to you, that we resonate with?
Oh, maybe we see ourselves in that person. We like to see, maybe if we're not winning in our lives, we tune in and we see somebody else that's
talking about, bitch, I'm Charlie Sheen, I win every day.
Tiger blood. Yep. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. 100%.
Tiger blood.
But no, I think from my point of view, I'd like to, maybe when I'm in one of those moods that I just want to, I want to see somebody who's up against it, who's the underdog, who, shouldn't succeed at the thing that they're going against. And, they do. But you know, the ones that, I mean, not to jump ahead of ourselves, but I think the, in this genre, the ones that I enjoy are the ones that I don't know if they're going to overcome the adversity. It's not obvious.
Yeah.
Right. I hate more than seeing, oh, okay, in the first 20 minutes, you're like, wow, this is going to happen and the good guy's going to win. And, you know, there we go. Like, you know, they're not going to Game of Thrones it, right?
No.
Right? Where you know, like, this guy was all over the posters, so he's probably not going to die in the first 25 minutes of the show.
Yeah.
But I like the ones that are, again, that are the slow build, and maybe they're not going to overcome that adversity that's thrown at them, right?
Do you like it? Like, when I look at this kind of thing, whenever you see something, right? And I mean, you can throw 100 movies at the wall, you're going to be able to find something in it. But do you like it when it's insurmountable, or do you like it when it's more grounded in reality, right? Like the impossible.
I like when
the tsunami coming through Thailand.
I like when,
right?
It's believable.
Okay.
But a big deal.
Okay.
Right? I like it when I discovered this the other day. I don't know if this is going to track. I'm watching a football game.
Okay.
I'm watching a football game of two teams I don't care about.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
For really any reason.
I know where you're going with this.
I found myself cheering for whoever was losing.
Sure.
Right? And not cheering out loud, but in my mind, I wanted the team that was losing to succeed at the thing they were currently doing. And when they were now winning, I wanted the other team to succeed at the thing. So,
you masochist.
Really not. Yeah, subconsciously, I always cheer for an underdog. It's a good story. You like to see somebody that's overcoming the odds, that somebody that's the long shot, that... Maybe we all look at ourselves as that we're the long shot in some aspect of our life. And, you know, when you see somebody that can do that, you see maybe the story of Andy Dufresne in the Shawshank Redemption, right?
That's the one, like, I'll defend all day long.
Whether he overcame it or he end-arounded it, you know, but he beat his adversity in one way or the other, right? He still ended up in Zwatnail. Right.
And Dufresne.
I mean, I know for me, that's what I like. I don't want to see, I don't like characters that I look at and go, wow, nothing's going to beat that guy. Like, maybe that's the superheroes I don't like, right? You're like,
You want something that's a little fallible.
If Superman was always Superman, I don't think we would like Superman. We like Superman because we like Clark Kent. Clark Kent is goofy. Clark Kent's not getting the girl. Clark Kent is the underdog.
May I even say that Clark Kent is Superman's weakness?
But he needs Clark Kent.
He does.
We wouldn't appreciate Superman if we didn't have Clark Kent.
Because we are Clark Kent.
Exactly. Wow. Unrelatable if he's just Superman all the
time. You got that all from football. That's the impressive part. So it fucking tracks, sir. No, I like, you know what I like? I like when a shit heel tries to turn the corner and the adversity is being a better human.
Oh.
Or making a better decision.
Yeah.
Or being self-sacrificing or something that is so anti to the character. Like, I love Loudermilk. I talked about this with Rob on the last episode. It's Ron Livingston's show. Very Hank Moody, Californication.
Okay.
All right.
I've watched that. Haven't watched Loudermilk.
Okay. All right. I love Hank. Yes, I love Hank because Hank can say things that no one is allowed to say in everyday society. But I like when Hank becomes better. I like when Hank gets out of being Hank for a minute because his struggle is with himself. His own adversity.
Oh, 100%.
Isn't society. They love him, right? Handsome writer driving around a Porsche. Like on the outset, totally fine. But more so, I like that than like the long walk through the mountains, Frodo. Like, you know what I mean? Like that kind of stuff, even if it is believable, I need something of a character flaw for my take on what I like about that being in a story than so much the you know, what's his face up the hill with the fucking rock, but you know,
yes, is that Apollo?
Some freaking Greek guy. So, yeah. Took me 20 minutes to remember Kirsten Dunst's name. You think I know his name? We cut that out for your listener.
Yeah, you know what, I think I know what you're getting at, and you want a person to overcome that adversity in themselves and change and maybe overcome a character flaw or, you know, come around in the end kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know,
you're picking up what I'm putting down.
Yeah. I do like that. I do like it because it shows that no matter what your first impression or, you know, the way that someone presents themselves, that maybe there's always that little piece of good in that thing or that, you know, that they're going to come around or Eastwood in
Scott or Clint?
No, Scott. No, Clint Eastwood.
Okay.
In
Gran Torino.
Gran Torino.
That's what you get.
Right.
It. You get it.
Right.
Because that right there is pure racism.
Yes.
An absolute fucking hate for a race, and by the end of it, he's a likable character because they're inviting him for food.
100%.
Reluctant. Yeah.
Right? He's even reluctant to the change, which makes it all that much more endearing because you know it's real. Because he's actually kind of fighting becoming a better person. Right?
I love that movie. I love that movie for so many reasons, and the least of them is that he directed it. But like Fong, the character that he takes under his wing, is such a lovable kid. That whole gang story, like everybody's overcoming something in that one. Every character.
All the levels of adversity, right?
All the levels of adversity. And I mean, as much as I also do like to watch a fight, right? Like when David's being pummeled by Goliath in another theme, mind you, I like that more in my reality television. Like when Survivor decides to be like, this is about overcoming adversity this season, or like they put it into it. That's the kind of stuff that I like. Cause then I'm like, oh, it actually, like I can see that. Right. Cause I'm not a athletic guy.
Yeah.
More than in reality, because I mean, sometimes you can be like, that's not even doable if you had the money and the math.
Yeah.
But what do I know?
No, I get you. And that's, I think, the list that you kind of put forward had a lot of examples of that sort of overcoming adversity in a lot of ways.
Let's attack this list in a bunch of different ways here. What was the first one that jumped out to you? I think I know what it is. Can I guess and then you can tell me?
Sure.
Are you going to tell me all about The Blind Side?
You know what? Blind Side was definitely up in the top two.
I just know that the Chrissy.
I mean, I already talked about Shawshank.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
right?
Yeah,
Shawshank
yeah.
is probably my all time number one movie.
It's why it's the poster for the episode.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you can't look at a guy who had everything, lost it, not by anything he did on his own, and then has to get out of a prison in his mind, get out of a physical prison, and then find happiness.
But you also get, along with that story, Mike, and why Shawshank, I think, it really sucks us in, is that there's people on their own path, right? Red has his own path.
Yeah.
Right? Red has adversity. Red's been there. Red's been there for longer than Andy has. And Red comes from the circle. Brooks gets let go and he can't survive outside of
life
prison,
is
right?
100%.
Because he's completely institutionalized and he doesn't overcome that.
No.
Right? You know, so we see others fail, which makes it that much better when Andy succeeds.
Let me just say this. Briggs was here.
Brooks
so,
was here.
Brooks
right?
was here. Yeah. So was Red. When they do, oh, right? I'm getting goosebumps right now.
Right? And Red goes through those same things, right? Yeah. The institutionalized, and he doesn't fit in, but he overcomes it. So I think we're getting like all of these different plots of this, these changes, these people overcoming these things.
Well, and someone at work today said to me, they're like, isn't that in everything? And I'm like, yeah, but when it's the core of something, it's completely different.
Yeah.
Like everybody in a movie, you need conflict in a movie. So right by definition, you can be like, well, adversity is conflict. Yeah, but how nuanced are you getting with it?
100%.
What's the story being told with it?
And I would argue what sucks you in is sometimes the subtle things that you talked about. It's not the hitman going after the person who doesn't want to be killed. It's the crisis of conscience that person has because they see a glimpse into their target's life and that target becomes a person.
Looper.
Right? I mean, that's there's a number of movies that are like that.
That's what
right?
came to my head.
Right? So that's what sucks people in. That's the story. The story's not, you know, a guy climbing a fucking mountain. The story is the guy's going to go climb a mountain, but there's all the people that are telling him he can't do it.
Yeah.
And his buddy dies halfway up the mountain. And, you know, it's all of those other little
and
things.
And someone comes and brings him a sword and says, it's okay, I'll take you the rest of the way, little elf.
Yeah. Right. And then that person was never there.
Yeah. Just the figment.
Right.
But the sword remains.
That's right. You know, I think those are the ones that grip us. It's and you realize like Rocky's.
I was just
going to
say
on the
sports.
List too. Yeah. Right. Rocky's not really the adversity. Right. He's got to overcome that in himself.
It's his own self-doubt from his own upbringing.
Exactly.
And which is so crucial to when you find out that Stallone was like $25 rich and begging to do the scene that wins the Oscar, right? Even the adversity of making the fucking film.
Yes.
Is wrapped into the actor playing the character who's trying to come up from the streets and be a boxer.
Yes.
That's what makes movies.
And I would argue that Rocky overcomes that adversity before he even fights Apollo.
100%. It's about self-doubt.
Right.
It's about
the fight
believing that
never even really has to happen for that movie to still be good.
No.
Right?
You just need the scene where he's like, oh, right?
Exactly.
Like, little note, they wanted to cut that. They gave him one take.
I tell you, you could have stopped the movie there because we all know what's going to happen.
We do.
At that point.
Yeah. That's what you're talking about where you're like, I can see this.
Exactly. Because right then it's obvious.
Yeah.
But it's getting to that point, right? It's those little things in those movies. You have a number of in Blindside.
I still haven't seen it.
Right? You haven't watched Blindside? Well, I mean,
I know I know the story, and I also know what came out. But let's focus on
right.
Him.
The big thing with Michael Orr in it is, I mean, he grew up in the ghetto. He was sucked into the gang. When he goes back home, when he's not around, it's that gang life, and he's a big kid, and so those gangsters want him to be part of their crew, and they want to suck him into it. And he comes from like the poor ghetto, and his mother's not good, and you know, that's how he ends up not wanting to go live there. And then he gets kind of sucked into this whole thing where she takes him in and, you know, sort of adopts him and gives him a purpose. But he's got so much to overcome from just the life that he
Even
came
the leg,
from that's sucking him back.
The leg up still isn't enough from how far he,
And he doesn't think he deserves it. Right during the movie, he doesn't think he deserves this opportunity, and he doesn't know why.
Same
and
with Rocky and Mick. He doesn't believe he deserves to be loved by Mick.
And so in the movie, there's also people that go to him, and you know, there's a story coming where these people are helping, and there's adversity, and they change because they change their opinions of things. But then there's a point where, you know, somebody says to him, well, they're doing this because, like, they want their alma mater school to succeed, so you're just a pawn in their game.
Yeah.
And he believes it for a minute. And be like, you know, is this really, do you really care about me or did you just care about this? And it's, you know, it's that adversity that's the relationship between the two of them that gets tested. And, you know, it's those stories that are so, it's the Aaron Brockovich. It's, It's those stories. It's not the little person against the big company that's killing people. It's those relationships that suck us in.
Yeah, it's the tangible moments that briefly you may encounter in your life, and then you see it on screen, and you're like, I can relate. I know what Aaron's feeling like. No, I don't. I'm just kidding. Between the two of these, what do you think would be harder, 127 Hours or A Beautiful Mind? Because they're both on this list. If you were in either of those characters' shoes and you had to either chop your arm off or deal with your schizophrenic demons.
I think A Beautiful Mind's harder.
Yeah, I think because so.
Because it's way more complex.
Yeah. It's unavoidable.
Yeah, if you want to get down to 127 hours, I mean, you all know what has to be done.
Do. Right? But you've got to go through every version of that in your head.
Yeah,
100%. No one's there to confirm that this is a good idea.
No.
No, you're listening to every voice inside your head. Same thing with Beautiful Mind, except his was a little girl and an old man and Ed Harris.
But maybe the path wasn't as clear.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Scientology for that. Yeah, like the mental health crisis in Beautiful Mind, going back to the place that triggers you, going to the place, like wanting to teach again, like going backwards to go forwards again, knowing that this is the place where you came up with your grand idea, where it also broke you, versus, I mean, I weigh them both equally because I've only experienced nothing remotely close to schizophrenia, but mental health problems. I've had moments nowhere near that. Just want to stress that. But I don't know if I could sit there and take my own arm off.
Yeah.
I don't think I don't think I'm getting over that mountain. I can't Sherpa myself up. You?
And that, I mean, I sitting here, no, but things change, right? When you're in a different situation, because once you're doing it, it's like, I guess I've experienced that in life where something just seems so ridiculous that I never thought I'd be in the middle of it. And then you're in the middle of it and you're going, all right, we're doing this.
That's true.
Right. Kind of thing. And I think
point of no return past.
I think on that point, you talk about, you know, mental health, and that's a big adversity theme in a lot of shows, and sometimes prominent, but sometimes secondary, where it's that thing it's the thing that sucks you in. It's maybe not. I'm trying to think. I'm trying to think of some examples, but you know, you have that, and it seems like, well, here's the obvious adversity.
Yeah.
But then here's the part that's really different, right? It's the different movies popping into my head. It's not mental health, I mask.
Oh.
Right. Right. The story is the relationships. The story
throwing
is
some share across the
is
bow.
Overcoming that thing in yourself, the people that told you you're not good enough, or you know, you're ugly and you're a monster and whatever it happens to be. I think a lot of that story, and maybe it doesn't end happy, like Mask doesn't end happy, but I think Rocky overcame his adversity before he passes in the movie. I don't know if you remember much.
Well, I remember
right?
the turtles,
things
I remember
like that.
The skating. I remember all the things that Rocky could never do before Adrian and before Mick. And then I the famous, like, you know, throw the punch and then the two of them are in the ring. But like, what are we?
The Rocky on the wall.
Yeah. No, he's a friend of mine. But like
I was talking, just to be clear, I was talking about Rocky and Mask.
Oh.
But we can go there. That's okay.
And that moment was brought to you by my brain fart, ladies and gentlemen.
But you do see in movies like that where people have mental health issues.
Yeah.
That the real adversity is in internal, right? The depression, the schizophrenia, the manic compulsive behaviors. I'm trying to put characters into my heads from these movies because I didn't really lay it out, but I know, you know, you see that quite often. And the story is about their journey. Even though there's these external things, I think it's the external adversity, if you will, is never the key.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, because it can be anything, right? It's a plot device. It's a MacGuffin. It's something to move it along, yeah. right? It's how the character reacts. It's how they're written to react. And then knowing, too, like, how many of these, I mean, a lot of them are biopics, right? Aaron Brockovich bio, Beautiful Mind bio, Slumdog Millionaire, right?
Yeah.
Coming out of the slums of India. I lost my train of thought. Like, I think it went the same
way
as Rocky.
I mean, take Slumdog Millionaire, right? There's the obvious adversity of just where he is, right? And making it to that point. But along with it, just doesn't... It wouldn't be a story if the kid... I'm going to forget his name, obviously.
Dev Patel, that's all I know, is the actor.
But if the kid in the movie believed he could do it the whole time,
yeah,
there's not a story there. The story is not believing you can do it, having people tell you you can't do it.
Being told that when you get close enough, you might be not given it.
Exactly. And then doing it anyways, right? The story is not, it's not about the external journey to winning. It's about the internal struggle, I think, based on what you're getting told, how you feel that I'm not good enough, I can't do it. If you just thought you could do it the whole time and all you had to do was get there, I don't think we have a story there.
No, again, back to conflict, right? You need something to stop him from you getting up that mountain. You make a really good point with Rocky, the mask version. Same thing with the King's Speech, right? A physical.
I have not seen the King's Speech.
Okay, I mean, the basic is he's got a speech impediment and he's very embarrassed by it. And Jeffrey Rush is, I believe, the guy who plays the pirate in First Pirates of the Caribbean, Barbossa, is his speech therapist. And it's like a coach-athlete situation.
Yep.
And watching him to today, Junior, to being able to make a speech to his kingdom, Colin Firth is, I mean, that's why he won an award for the movie. If you really want to, if you like something that, and I mean, it's not about the stutter. It's about the shame. It's about the monarchy, right? It's about where you say it's about the internal conflict. This one's about the outliers, right? The things that society expects a king to not stutter when he speaks to his commoners, right? And he's going to let his family down. He's going to let his wife down. He's letting everybody down around him, but he's just being beaten down. And I think, like, I mean, sports movies, you could be tropey all day long, but some of the best moments of adversity, like team-on-team wrestling moments.
If I pitched you a movie where it's an 83-0 undefeated college basketball team that's going to continue to win,
yeah.
There's no story.
No. But like Miracle in Alaska, where like the local team has to bind together to play the New York Rangers, I think, and no one thinks they can do it because like one's a slut, the other one's the bartender, one guy's too drunk, like the ragtag misfits.
Right,
We are Marshall. Gridiron Gang.
Right, kill off the entire, or most of the team.
Yeah.
Right.
Build from scratch,
overcome adversity. You were great.
Yeah.
Nobody ever thinks you can get there again.
You've seen the dance.
If you do start with the team that's successful, there has to be a major incident.
Yeah.
That
demolishes.
The incident isn't, again, the adversity. The adversity is, well, nobody thinks we can do it. We don't think we can do it.
You could be in a lockout like in The Replaceables.
Right.
With Keanu Reeves.
Well, see, there you go. Then it takes a weird turn and they just get scabs and it all works out.
Replacements.
But the quarterback overcomes his adversity he's over the hill.
Shane
he's
Falco.
Washed out and Falco is, you know, back.
He's got the arm again,
right?
And
he can
do his thing.
100%.
I love that Keanu movie. It's such an underrated movie. I mean, back to your point of like why we watch them, I think I cry the most in these scenes. Yeah. I mean, a death, Tony died and I cried. I think that's the only like death outside of like real death.
Yeah.
That brings me Opie, when we talked about Opie's death, right? But I don't whimper at a death scene. I whimper in a moment of triumph. And maybe that comes from like the whole like shitty relationship with my dad, never had a hand on my shoulder, like, you know, guiding me the way. So like whenever I see a triumphant moment in a movie, that's when I well up.
You
like
know
a
what
bitch.
Here's a perfect example. You bring up Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
We didn't cry. We didn't get so emotional necessarily just because Opie died. I know, speaking for me, I got emotional because I saw Jax, who doesn't have emotions, care about Opie dying.
Jack's lost his best friend.
Right? If we didn't see Jack seeing Opie die, right?
Yep.
Right?
Not as effective.
Right? No. If he just gets killed and it's not where he's seeing it happen, you can't do anything about it. You know, though, that scenario where we're watching from the other side of the glass
fucking
when
trapped.
It's taking place.
Yeah.
Then it doesn't matter as much. And a lot of that is in those movies is when we get into the... You get into the somebody that's stoic, that shows no emotion, and then during the course of the movie, it gets to the point where you see a tiny bit of humanity in
like
somebody.
Crack.
Right? That's a win, right? If somebody's just full of good, they're always good. But when we see somebody that we don't expect to be good, and then, you know, during a series of events, then the good comes out, you know? I think that's a huge win in that overcoming adversity.
You know what the sometimes a good generic no preservatives, no additives moment in like the pursuit of happiness where it's just about working hard and trying to get ahead and proving to everybody that you can do the job. Sometimes it's as simple as watching a guy try to teach his son a life lesson about you don't let anybody keep you down. And I know I'm going to get people's faces across the screen because I'm talking about Will Smith, but like the pursuit of happiness is probably one of the most like fantastic versions of like sleeping in the subway, bathroom with your kid, holding onto the laser x-ray machine you're trying to sell, convincing the lawyer to hire you, right? It's a rock bottom moment. And I think, I mean, as much as I mentioned it earlier, the impossible with a wave coming in or some sort of or like Twister or any of those natural nautical disaster type scenarios. I think good old fashioned elbow grease and, you know, overcoming or getting put over is just as good as, you know, something big and cinematic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we got Castaway on this list.
Like,
do we care if,
well said.
If he washes up on shore and he just. I mean, he fucking survivors it and he builds like a perfect bed and a house and like he's just living his best life eating coconuts. And like, there's not a story there. The story is how hard it is, how
the story's getting back.
Right. And the story is his mental, like keeping shit together when you're talking to a volleyball. Like, right.
What was that, Wilson? What was you say?
I mean, you know, it's just a whole different series. And again, it's the internal. It's that struggle. If he's just there and like, one of these days I'm going to get rescued.
Shipping lane will pull through one of these
100%,
hours.
100%, right?
Yeah.
You know? But the story is that, is it never going to happen? Is he going to die? Is he going to... And it's not till you get to the point where maybe he thinks it's never going to happen that it happens. And, you know, those are the stories. It's very Shawshanky in the sense that... When they're trying the most is where you think it might happen and it doesn't. And then when you've kind of given up on it, then it comes through kind of deal, right?
100%. You know those scenes where, like, they instead of telling you something, they show you something?
Yeah.
And showing you, you could have used 12 lines of dialogue, but if I show you. And it's the change when I think he knocks his tooth out. And then they cut to a year and a half, 2 years later, and he looks like he's born on the island.
Yeah.
And that moment, without any dialogue, just him standing there spearfishing, getting a red snapper, is like, I did it. I'm now living here, right?
Yeah,
this island's my bitch.
Yep.
And you could have had a moment where he was talking to Wilson and had some big Eureka thing, but just that one shot says more than you could ever do with dialogue.
Yep.
Fuck, FedEx, ice skates, right? And then firmly delivering the package in the end, right? This doesn't about getting on the island. I was getting you your package.
I think we as viewers really love that story because the ones that really we connect with, and we don't all connect with the same characters.
No.
But we'll see a little piece of us or see a little piece of our lives. Maybe we see our father, our mother, or one of our
That's
kids
what I see. I see
in that, one of the yeah. characters, right? And we see a father that never showed any emotion to us, and then, you know, it
Dude,
happens in a right?
Those? I've tried to watch The Beautiful Boy with Timothée Chalamet and Steve, what's his face from The Office?
Carell.
I can't do a scene where a guy's dying of drugs and the dad comes in. I will cry like a baby. Like that
just
stuff
hits too close to home.
It just
right?
hits too close to home. I mean,
I can't listen to Cats in the Cradle, the fucking song, without breaking into tears. Right?
Yeah.
It just hits too close to home.
It's that thing, and yeah, you're right. Like, I would rather prefer mine defeat tsunamis, where you would rather yours have an internal crisis. But I mean, both of them, I think the more interesting one is the internal crisis.
But even when you're overcoming a tsunami, you believe you're going to die, right? And then the realization that you didn't die, but you had made peace with it.
And that's when you care the least, right? You're like, all right, exactly. I'm fucking going out. Might as well do this thug style.
And then inevitably, you're changed at the end.
Yeah, the only way out is through.
Exactly.
So I think we know what we like about our themes, or this theme specifically. Emotional catharsis, reliability, inspiration for such stories.
Well, relatable, we've discussed in depth.
And the catharsis is watching the movie and experiencing the emotions all over again that are triggering, like your song. And
when you cry, but you're happy about the fact that you cried.
Yeah. I mean, I eat shit all the time from Shauna because she'll just look over at me and I was like, yes, I am caught up in the fucking story. Leave me alone. I'm human, right? But at the end of the day, it feels good.
Right? We all have those moments from movies. Like, we don't all have them, but I literally have moments in movies that I can think of one tiny moment that made me cry. And just thinking about it right now will probably make me cry.
That's how actors cry.
Right? Because I go back to that moment in that movie and I'm like, why did I care so much?
Broken.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Fucking batteries not included.
Oh,
give me a break. That one fucking line. I lose it. Like, I'm almost losing it right now.
And they're like little hotels, right? Floating hotels.
Yes.
And like, all they wanted to do was, like, when they fixed the restaurant, look, I could see it. I could see it. It's just like in the corner of your eye right now.
Right.
No, you're right. And again, overcoming a planet full of humans to a 100%. Bunch of tiny aliens. That's a lot of adversity, baby.
Right.
Well, listener, if you have an idea, for one of the if there's a movie that you watch that you love the underdog in, that something strikes a chord in you that has to do with overcoming the adversity in either an internal crisis or an external one, whatever, we love it when you submit shit. More people should do it, and then we would mention you and we would promote
well
you
maybe we even pose the question. I have a hard time thinking about a movie where there's not some sort of adversity.
Great question. Find a movie where
everything works and it's a great movie but there's no adversity.
And tell me you enjoy it. Tell me how you enjoy that, because the conflict is relatable. The adversity, even if it's insurmountable, you can relate to it on some level. So, like, yeah, if there is none, like, I mean.
I'm hard-pressed to think of a movie where there's not something like that. And it goes back to the sports analogy. And I come on, listener, seriously, give me a list. If you're like, wow, you're a fucking idiot. There's all these movies, blah, blah, blah. I don't care about my sports team if my sports team never lost. I don't want it to happen, but the knowledge that it can happen makes winning feel good.
It's the
if you've never experienced losing, you don't appreciate winning.
The sweet without the sour.
Exactly. You need both.
You need us in your life, listener. That's what we're saying. So yeah,
the mic without the mark. No, it's
useless. It's like I'm missing a leg. So yeah, take Mark's challenge. Take the Mark Cowell is in Batman's head challenge.
Well, some would argue the only movies that do that are basically documentaries.
Probably. About monkeys.
They just tell us stuff.
Yeah, you're just educating me. It's straight start to finish. In the show notes, we've got a Quora link, which is where you can ask questions and keep filling out the list. I made one. So if there's a question you want us to answer, we will do it on the air. We will mention you as well, too. If you want to leave a voicemail, the voicemail's in the show notes as well. Right next to where Mark's information for March 23rd for the String Bean Comics.
C4, Central Canada Comic Con.
Taking over C4 and running with the fucking torch.
Continuing the banner. Can't guarantee it's going to be everything that you thought it's going to be, and it was, but give us a shot.
Yeah, no, go support, because then you're going to say one day, why don't we have nice things? And it's because you don't go and support stuff like this. And I apply this thinking to us as well, too. Whenever we're like, what are we going to do in Winnipeg? Do something new and fun. Do something you haven't done before, because that's how those small things stay around for when you want to do them once or twice a year.
Give that show more than one episode.
Yeah, exactly. Give us
the movie more than the first 10 minutes.
Man, you're fucking like a depth of a shower stall. No, I'm just kidding. And yes, February 13th for us at Rudy's, and February 28th at Little Brown Jug at the Handsome Daughter for Scott Pilgrim Movie and Bingo Trivia Night and Romantic Comedy Trivia Number 4. brought to you by The Real Debaters, February 13th. Get your tickets in the show notes. Rudy Poo Candy Ass.
Yet another great movie about overcoming adversity.
Right? Rudy. That's a great song, too. Yeah, I've been Michael.
I've been Mark. I still am, actually.
You're yeah.
Have been, am.
Will.
Will be.
Forever. Watch all the movies, kids. Say bye, Mark.
Bye. Bye.
Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.